it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870 WWL. Mike to tell you along with Charlie Long. A little after 5:20 this afternoon, we'll have on with us our Odyssey NFL insider, Mark Schlereff, who will join us to talk about Saints, Bears, everything across the NFL. We'll also have our Pick 6 segment early this week, a little change in the lineup, so we'll put Pick 6 early. And then Steve and Charlie will have Jake Madison on a little after 6 o'clock, talk about the Pelicans and tonight they play Houston Rockets. So, and Charlie, where they can catch that here on the dial?
It's going to be on 870 AM starting at 7 o'clock.
Okay, on the Big 870. And then also at 7 o'clock, it'll be the Saints Hour with Mike Haas. And he'll have on with him Kai Harley, the salary cap guy. Tell us all about fixing up all the numbers, trying to get that straight, because I think that's an important thing. If you're going to try to rebuild this team, you got to get your finances straight. And we can. A lot of people in life are just like it. You got to get your finances straight before you can do anything else. You can hear all that right here on the Big 870 WWL. Charlie, interesting game this week. It has not happened since 1948, but Vanderbilt, that line opened at 1.5, has went to 2, now 2.5. As the Vanderbilt Commodores coming off a bye week are a 2.5-point favorite, depending on where you bet, either 2 or 2.5, over the LSU Tigers. And, man, I think about when Clarkley got that job, and he first came on the scene. He was a running back at Vanderbilt, actually played fullback, but same spot, and kind of bounced around the college football world. Then he became the linebackers coach for Brian Kelly at Notre Dame, then eventually the defensive coordinator before landing the Commodores job. And in 2021 and 2023, it didn't look good. They were 2-10 both years. Sandwiched in between there was a 5-7 Vanderbilt football team. You wondered, could Clark get this all together? Last year he did. They were a 7-6 football team. They were very competitive, a really good football team you didn't want to see on the schedule. This year, 5-1, and with a tough loss to Alabama because, man, twice you had scoring opportunities, and Diego Pave, man, he kind of screwed the pooch a little bit and didn't get him in there. But they are a tough football team, smart defensively, not a ton of talent, but they play good, solid football. They fill in the gaps in against the run. Where I think LSU, if they can click, is going to be in the passing game, throwing the ball downfield. That's where I think Vanderbilt's going to give you some opportunities. On offense, with Diego Pave, he's college football's version of Baker Mayfield. One tough son of a gun. It doesn't come out pretty sometimes, but he's smart. He's gritty. He's tough. He never gives up on a play, which is sometimes good and sometimes bad, but he has given them life as a program and what he's been able to do because he plays with so much confidence. He's talented. He's a talented college player, but he gives you so much life out on that football field. Every starter that they have along their offensive line is all guys from the transfer portal. And the one guy LSU better watch is number 9, Eli Stowers, the tight end. He could have come out early last year. I think he would have straddled being a late day 2 pick and early day 3 pick, but he decided to come back, play another year for Vanderbilt, and he's an important weapon for them, being able to catch the football over the middle and also move the chains. This Vanderbilt team, it ain't your daddy's and your grandpa's Vanderbilt. They pretty doggone good, and they got a bye week to prepare for you. I think LSU's defense will match up pretty well against Vanderbilt's offense. Can LSU get anything going on offense that shows some consistency We saw a little bit of it against South Carolina, but then the turnovers got involved with that game. And an 11 o'clock kickoff. And I think for all LSU fans, they all tell me, I hate it. I hate the 11 o'clock kickoff for LSU. How they respond to that. And LSU's in for a fist fight this week against Vanderbilt.
Diego Pavia is a bulldog, Mike. I mean, the dude is unbelievable throwing and running the ball. He's a true dual threat QB. And Coach Kelly kind of talked a little bit about it yesterday at his press conference on Monday, that, you know, they have to slow him down in the ground game, because if he gets going running the football, he leads Vanderbilt in rushing yards, by the way. Yep. They have a talented running back as well, and that Alexander kid, but he leads them in rushing yards for the season. And so if he gets going on the ground, he's just really, really difficult to defend. So stop him in his rushing attack and then force him, because that was another thing.
Force him to beat you throwing it.
Force him to beat you throwing it, but that's another thing, Mike, is, you know, something that Coach Kelly had brought up, and he's right on this, is the early down situations are going to be huge for LSU's defense. Vanderbilt is number two in the country in third down conversion rate, only behind Utah. They're at 58% on the season. And that's because they get these little chunk plays on first and second down. They get themselves into these third and three, third and two, third and short, manageable situations, and then they just keep the chains moving. That's the type of offense that they can run if you're not being effective defensively on early downs. If you get them into those third and long situations, get negative plays, you know, they're not going to beat themselves with penalties. They're a very disciplined team, as you kind of mentioned there. So, but being able to kind of force them to short gains on first down and second down and getting them into those third and longs are going to be huge for LSU's defense.
Yeah, another thing, too, is to hit some big plays because I do think if Vanderbilt is vulnerable, it's on the deep end in the secondary, and LSU's got to be able to come up with those plays. Come on, Chris Hilton, catch the ball. You had an opportunity to make a big play there and, you know, kind of hit him in a bad place right between the hands. Chris has got to make those plays. You want to be a next level player, which I think he's got the talent to do so, but he's got that dreaded word about him, potential. Okay, you got to make that play, and especially in this type of game, in this type of environment. And you know, Vanderbilt, they're not scared of you. They went toe-to-toe with Alabama. They're not scared of LSU. But, again, I think if you can force him to throw the football, because LSU's strength is in that secondary, throw the football downfield and kind of mash him a little bit, give him that little underneath stuff, but don't move the chains, I think is going to be critical for the Tigers this coming Saturday morning. And we started off early, Herb Tyler and I, 7 o'clock on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger tailgating show, and then 11 o'clock kickoff right here on the Big 870 WWL LSU Vanderbilt. We come back, we'll have on with us our Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, and we're joined by our Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast now on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Mark, thanks so much for joining us. How's the podcast? What you got on this week?
Oh, you know, just talking a little bit of who's the best team. Is Kansas City back? What's going on? I will tell you guys, we didn't talk about New Orleans, but, man, I know they lost, but that was pretty impressive. And Spencer Rattler's playing some good football right now. Fun to watch.
I was going to ask you about that, Mark, because – you know, you got a lot of fans that, you know, Hebert always brings this up. They always want to blame the quarterback. Okay, the fact that you're not winning games is not Spencer Rattler's fault. Okay, you had a couple passes in that game Chris Olave couldn't come down with. Then you hit Juwan Johnson. He gets the ball punched out on him. They make a big play and get down inside the five. They hit Valet on a pass. Kelvin Banks Jr. gets called for holding. You know, it's like one after the other after the other. And then defensively, in the first half, Mark, I'll be honest, Drake May looked like they could have put him in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I mean, everything was spot on with him, hitting big plays, third down conversions. It wasn't about Spencer Rattler. But again, you played in this league. You know, quarterback, way too much credit when they win sometimes and way too much blame when they lose.
Yeah, there's no question. I thought Spencer Rattler acquitted himself quite well. And, you know, you're 100% right about Drake May. I mean, that dude looked like a Hall of Famer. I mean, his ability to manipulate the pocket, to climb the pocket, to throw accurately, to do all that stuff, I thought he was phenomenal. But I really, as I watched that game, I was really impressed with, like I said, I was really impressed with Spencer Rattler and some of what he's got going on right now. And, you know, the bottom line is, I don't think the expectations were real high in New Orleans, at least nationally. But what I'm seeing is a team that's fighting. They're not, you know, when I hear people say, oh, you know, we got to stink and see what we can get in the draft and how high can we go, man. I love the fact that those guys are competing their butts off. I love the fact that Kellen Moore and his staff are not just rolling over. Man, they're a tough out, and I think New England's a pretty damn good football team. So kudos to the Saints for at least fighting and doing what they're doing. I've been pretty impressed so far.
Last night, Bijan Robinson, if you didn't know about him, you sure found out. And he sort of took over that football game against Buffalo. Now, we've talked about this. Buffalo's defense is outright bad. I mean, they can't stop a cold. Nothing. But, man, Bijan showed his talents and why you can make a pretty strong argument. If he's not number one, he certainly is number two as from a running back standpoint. And, you know, a lot of people, oh, you can't pick a running back in the top 10 picks. Why not? Look at what Bijan means to the Falcons as a runner and a receiver. Bijan Robinson's one hell of a football player.
Yeah, no question about it, man. He is must-see TV, there's no question. And you're 100% right. The guy's phenomenal. And his ability to run the ball, to catch the ball, to do all those things that he does. And not only that, man, you want to talk about a kid that you're just like, when you get a chance to talk to him or meet him, man, the most respectful kid, yep. Like just so happy. And he's special, man. He is just special. And you love to see those kind of guys, you know, those guys that have that kind of quality about them go out there and have success. So a lot of fun. But, hey, all of a sudden, the Atlanta Falcons, you know, they're not some pushover. All of a sudden, as a matter of fact, all of a sudden that division, like if you think about the NFC South and going into the season and you think, oh, man, it's going to stink. You know, the Saints aren't going to be – they're an easy out. And the Atlanta Falcons are an easy out. The Carolina Panthers are an easy out. All of a sudden, man, you get in that division, and it's not an easy out for anybody, man. The Carolina Panthers, the way they're running the ball right now, the Falcons with Bijan and the way Michael Penix is starting to look, and, you know, and ultimately, like I said, with you guys, there's no easy game in the NFC South like it used to be.
Stink, you brought it up, but isn't the Bucs becoming must-watch TV because of Baker Mayfield? Now, they played the 49ers in a late game, and, you know, the only thing they missed from that was McClain Stevenson, you know, and Alan Alda from MASH. I mean, both units are all beat up, and Baker making it happen. And, again, in the third and fourth quarter, him being able to flip that switch and throwing touchdown passes to Taz Johnson. We talked about this last night. Taz, you know, when he makes that great catch in the end zone, and, man, everybody starts, you know, chanting MVP, MVP. Thought it was for him. Didn't realize it was for Baker Mayfield. They had to tell him, you know, when he hit the sidelines. But, man, are the Bucs becoming must-watch television?
Yeah, Baker Mayfield is, like, he's must-watch television. That his ability to compete and his ability just to lead that offense. And, you know, no Mike Evans. They had two or three receivers that are out right now. You know, and then your running back and Bucky Irvin is out right now. The right side of your offensive line has been injured and has been out. Like you look at what he's doing, he just hoists them on his back and said, "Let's go, boys." And you're right, it's must see television. He is must watch, and you know, there's no question he's the MVP right now, the early favorite in the clubhouse, and it's Baker Mayfield. And then you got to go a couple drops below before you can even start talking about whoever the next guy is. There's no question that guy is, I mean, it's just unreal the way he's playing.
Insider Calls with Mark Schlereff are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Last night we also saw the Bears play who the Saints play next. And Mark, I thought it was the most Detroit Lions type of game for Ben Johnson since he's the coach of the Bears, where they leaned a lot on DeAndre Swift and the running game. And, man, Swift came up big. They hadn't run the football very well at all. A lot of that, some offensive line issues. You got some new pieces, especially in the middle, with some vets that you were able to bring in. Also, your tackle spots have been sort of beat up. But Swift was the difference last night. And him being able to run the football, and also he's such a threat catching the ball coming out of the backfield. But it looked sort of like a lot of what we saw in Detroit when Ben Johnson was there.
Yeah, Ben Johnson's one of those guys, you know, that we always talk about, you know, young offensive coordinators that can get quarterbacks playing well and all that stuff. And then when you really dig into what they do, man, the base of everything they want to do is about running the football. And like Ben Johnson is one of those guys, man, he understands the value of it. You watch during his Detroit time, they were in the top two or three every year as far as second down and long and third down and long run plays called. And part of that is because they knew the head coach was going to go for it on fourth down. But you get a lot of favorable looks in those second and long and third and long when they become passing situations. So your number counts are good in these situations. Pop a draw, pop an inside trap, whatever the case may be, you're going to have pretty good number counts if you decide to run the football in those situations. And, you know, and you can get some pop out runs too, especially if they're playing man to man situations. So, you know, he's just one of those dudes that he understands the value. And I always liked Swift, you know, regardless of where he was. I thought Swift was a really good back, and it's fun to see him get those opportunities, although it was against one of my former teams in the Washington. I don't like calling them the Commanders. I'll just call them the Washington football team. And, you know, and that was that's a big time victory getting that late field goal opportunity.
Yeah, it was almost kind of like the revenge game, right, Mark, if you remember what happened last year with that Hail sure. Mary that Jaden Daniels had, and then both seasons went in the opposite directions for those two teams, with the Commanders taking that all the way to the NFC Championship game, and then the Bears completely crashing and burning after that. But realistically, like, what have you seen from Caleb Williams this year? Because it feels like last night's game against Washington was a really strong performance. I know that in his rookie campaign, the big knock on him was that he held onto the ball way too long, took too many sacks. I mean, it's not all on your offensive line when you're trying to do the same things that you were doing at USC and Oklahoma that won't translate to the NFL, but just kind of your evaluation of Caleb, and then also the offensive weapons. Mike and I have kind of talked about it with Adunze and DJ Moore, both studs, a young guy and Luther Burden, and then investing in the tight end position as well with Cole Kmet and Colson Loveland.
Yeah, no, they're a really talented offense from a weapons standpoint, but again, you know, Ben Johnson had the beauty and had the understanding of, hey, we dominate the line of scrimmage in Detroit, you know, and they had a lot of weapons as well. But what they had was the ultimate weapon, and that was an offensive line that was just outstanding, right? Protected quarterback, did all those things. And you're 100% right. Like, sacks have become more of a quarterback-driven statistic than they have an offensive line-driven statistic. And Caleb took a lot of sacks where he didn't throw the ball, he wasn't on time, his footwork was bad. And that's something they've worked exceptionally hard on. And it's not where it needs to be, but it's better than it was. And, you know, Ben Johnson's a buddy of mine, so I talked to Ben Johnson about what they've worked on and you know, have been in contact with him over the course of the off season and during the early part of this season. And, Listen, man, it's a work in progress, and Caleb is making strides. You have to understand that, you know, his whole career from 7-on-7 to, you know, to USC, to high school, to USC, all that stuff, man. Those guys, they play in college. They play off schedule. That's what they do. And so then all of a sudden you get to the NFL, man. You cannot win playing off schedule consistently. You will get beat. You will get sacked. You will have a strip sack fumble. You will throw a pick. You have got to be on target. You've got to be on time with the football. And then ultimately, you've got to keep your offense, you know, in front of the chains. You got to keep yourself in second and short, or second and medium, and third and short. And if you're consistently playing off schedule, you're consistently going to be in second down and long and third down and long situations. You can't win football. You can't sustain drives in those situations. So, yeah, he played pretty good last night. I'm sure there's some things he'd like back. But the bottom line, they found a way to get a win, and he seems to be improving, you know, week in and week out.
Last question for you, Mark. Seattle, and watching them play, their defense, man, tough physical defense. Sam Darnold, staying away from the mistakes, throwing the football. But the one thing I give them, and this is a Kubiak trait, sometimes the running game is not there for you. They ran the football 26 times against Jacksonville. They got 60 yards, and they threw it 27. But he didn't get away from it. I give Kubiak a lot of credit there in that he kept kind of pounding it, despite the fact they weren't getting a lot of yardage, but he knew he could count on his defense to come up with some big plays, and Darnold not throwing kind of picks. That to me, man, Seattle, when you see them on the schedule, you better get ready. You better button up that chin strap, because they're going to butt you in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, they've got – you know, Smith and Jigba's having an unbelievable season. They've got Cooper Kupp. They've got the three tight ends on their roster. All three can play. And, you know, ultimately, you look at what Jacksonville did. Like, they're just focused on shutting down the run. And there was a couple of first down plays, you know, P&10 plays, where they took shots over the top and they got those big plays in the passing game. So it was a well-constructed game plan. But, again, you know, there's – a few things. They felt pretty confident in their ability to defend Jacksonville's offense and to shut down the run and get after the quarterback with their front four and their, you know, and bringing, you know, occasionally dog pressure. And they did that on a consistent basis. And you consider the fact that they lost three of their starting DBs. Julian Love is as good a safety as there is in this league. They didn't have him. Devin Witherspoon, maybe the best nickel corner in football. They didn't have him. Right, they didn't have Reek Woolen, who's big, long, and lanky, can run like the wind. So three of their starting four in the back end were gone, and they dominated as a defense after the first series, where that Jacksonville got a couple of, in the first quarter, they got a couple of big plays. I don't think it might not have been the first series, it might have been the second series, but got a couple of big plays down the sideline, a couple of shot plays. And after that, man, they just tightened up and were exceptional throughout the rest of the ball game. So, big time performance by Seattle.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us. Always love when you come on, buddy. Thanks so much.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Thanks, bye-bye. Mark.
All righty. That was Odyssey NFL Insider Mark Schlereff, host of the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Insider calls are brought to you by Nationwide. For your insurance and financial needs, Nationwide is on your side. Mark is the host of the Odyssey original, the Stinkin' Truth podcast. Remember to listen to the Stinkin' Truth podcast on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. We come back. Pick six right here on the Big 870 WWL.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long, Steve Geller. It's our Pick 6 segment. Instead of doing it on Thursday, we're doing it on Tuesday. Charlie, I'll let you roll with it.
All right, guys, so we'll just kind of recap. In last week, it was actually a good week for us. congrats. I wish I had like the whoopee. Mike, you and I both went 4-2. Steve, you also went 4-2. Bobby was the worst of us at 3-3. So nobody had a losing week. Congrats, guys. That's progress.
His wife's still doing real good on them picks.
Listen, the upgraded standings. Mike, you are in the lead at 24-19. Bobby's at 23-20. Steve's at 22-21. And I am still behind at 18-25. I got to make some ground up here, guys. Mm. But, you know, listen, I dug myself a hole. Baker Mayfield in Alabama really, really hurt me within the first half of the season. And, you know, I've changed my strategy a little bit. So let's see if it works out here for the better. Guys, College Football Week 8 is awesome. This weekend, it's got five different ranked matchups, a lot of really intriguing games. But at the same time, we had to pick four because we're only doing pick six and we only did two NFL games. So we're going to go in chronological order as always, starting with number 10 LSU at number 17 Vanderbilt. Vandy, 2.5-point favorites, Mike, as we had kind of mentioned in the first segment of the hour. Bobby's got LSU, and I was talking to you off air about this, Mike. I am begrudgingly agreeing with him. There is so much working for Vanderbilt in this game. For one, they're at home. It's at early 11 a.m. start time, and they're coming off a bye week. But LSU, despite the ugly win against South Carolina, showed me some things in the passing attack that I think they can build on for this upcoming matchup against Vanderbilt. LSU's defense, I'm relying on you here. Give me the Tigers plus 2.5.
LSU, I think they win in a close game, but this may be a field goal situation late, but give me the Tigers.
Yeah, I'm going with LSU here too, guys. So a clean sweep. The offense has been, you know, stop and start with Nussmeier. We've seen him have four touchdowns, four interceptions, and three SEC games. With me, the offense, Charlie, I was at least encouraged a little bit by the run game.
Yeah.
Kind of showed up last matchup, and I see LSU getting an 11th straight victory over Vandy, even though, like you mentioned, that early start and on the road, not the, you know, kind of dismays you a little bit going into this matchup, but I still think LSU pulls it out.
And them coming off a bye, it is a scary, scary
right.
pick. It is easily the least confident that I am of any of these picks, but we'll go
Missouri,
with
that didn't do them no good with the bye.
That's true, but Bama's playing different, Mike. We'll get to them in just a second. So that's the first of three top 25 ranked matchups in the SEC. Up next, we're going with another one. This one's a top 10 game. Number 5, Ole Miss at number 9, Georgia. Georgia 7.5-point favorites at home, guys. I know that Ole Miss did not look very good against Wazoo this past weekend. Mike, you and I were also talking off air about this. I think there may have been some kind of look ahead factor there. I think Georgia wins this game, but I don't think they cover the 7.5. That sucker half point. I hate it. So give me Ole Miss. Bobby's also got Ole Miss. What do you guys got?
Guys, I'm going to take Georgia in this one at home, given that 7.5. We'll see how two sons of Saban face off here with the winner. Basically having a serve, you know, holding serve for that SEC title game spot. I think Georgia's defense earns the win. They did that, covered in Alabama, and I think they do the same this matchup.
You stole my thunder, Steve. That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm going to go with the Bulldogs here. They don't do anything great, but they good across the board. I don't know why, but I think history tells you Kiffin has not matched up well against Kirby Smart in Georgia. And so I'm going to go with the Bulldogs.
Up next, guys, we got another top 25 ranked matchup in the SEC. Number 11, Tennessee at number 6, Alabama. A very underrated rivalry in the SEC circles. Alabama minus 7.5 at home. Bobby's got Bama covering. I agree with him. Tennessee's got some defensive issues, and Ty Simpson is playing lights-out football right now. Give me the Tide to roll, and at home as well, where Kalen DeBoer has been excellent.
Yeah, I'm doing a little more research on my picks of late, Charlie, and I'm seeing here the Tide are 3-0 against the spread at home. Like you mentioned, too, Ty Simpson continued to play at the high level. Tennessee hasn't won at Bama since 2003. Roll Tide.
Same here. Going with Alabama, Tennessee's so leaky on defense.
Yes.
I think they can score points and match Alabama, but good gracious, they don't play well on defense. And, man, to lose that Georgia game the way they did, I don't know, it almost like took like a body punch to them. So I'm going to go with Alabama.
Clean sweep for the second time joining that LSU matchup, guys, and give me one second because I'm looking up Notre Dame's schedule here because it's a cupcakes stretch basically after this matchup.
Shocking.
Wrapping up College Football Week 8, we got number 20 USC at number 13 Notre Dame. Notre Dame 8.5-point favorites at home. Bobby's got Notre Dame minus 8.5. I agree with him. This is part of that stretch run where, you know, at the end of the season, people will be talking about this 10-2 Notre Dame team saying, oh, do they deserve to be in the college football playoff with those two losses to Texas A&M and Miami, who are both ranked in the top five right now? And I think that they'll be able to actually get in because they're going to win all these games in a row, and that includes this matchup against USC. I think they handle business at home. Give me Notre Dame minus 8.5.
The Irish definitely have had some easy wins of late, but give me the USC Trojans here. They're coming up four straight, you know, pretty nice Big Ten wins, including that impressive one over Michigan. I'll take the Trojans getting 8.5, guys.
Give me the Trojans and the 8.5 points.
It's too many?
Yeah, a lot. I think Notre Dame wins, but, you know, man, 8.5 points? I'll take USC.
After that, they got Boston College, Navy, Pittsburgh, Syracuse, and Stanford. So, this is like the last roadblock for them, and I think Marcus Freeman
Pittsburgh
will have his guys
up. Pittsburgh might be tough.
Yeah, Pitt, who did they beat this past weekend, Mike? It was FSU, right?
Yeah,
Florida
they
State.
They beat Florida State.
Coach Norvell, that team is collapsing again. All right, guys, moving on to NFL Week 7. We got the Saints at the Bears. Chicago, 5.5-point favorites at home. Bobby's got the Saints plus 5.5, as he always does. Give me the Bears minus 5.5. This kind of screams to me like a 27-20 type of game.
Yeah, sadly, I'm picking Chicago here, too, just for the fact I don't like anything the Saints offense is doing right now, and I think it's hard for anybody that watches this club, you know, regularly to get excited about the lack of scoring, not just in the red zone, overall, just not getting enough touchdowns, and you're not going to win games with field goals, especially going on the road against Chicago. Mike, I've heard you talked about it and agree with you. I might not be crazy about the quarterback in Caleb Williams. He's good, but man, oh man, there's a lot of weapons over there that are a problem.
Ooh-wee. And they had difficulties matching up with Douglas and Boutte. I understand Stephon Diggs. But man, they catch them this week. I got to go with the Bears here.
Yeah, so Bobby's staying alone with the Saints, and we'll see if they end up covering or even winning the game outright. And then, guys, wrapping up a primetime game on Sunday Night Football. We were kind of back and forth with the other NFL game. Would we take the Monday night game between the Lions and the Buccaneers? Instead, we decided to go the Falcons at the 49ers. And the big question, can Kyle Shanahan and this 49ers team that is, as you had mentioned earlier, Mike, a mash unit, continue to somehow win football games? San Francisco, 2.5-point favorites at home. Bobby's got the Falcons plus 2.5. I was burned by the Falcons last week, so I will take them here as well, plus 2.5. Bijan Robinson's been unbelievable. And give me Drake London and Michael Penix hooking up a couple times to be able to pull out this victory. And if not, you know, I have a couple points to work with here, too.
This one I'm definitely not happy at all with picking. I'm going with Atlanta, too, guys. You look at the 49ers right now. Mash unit, banged up squad, whatever you want to say, they are hurting for certain. Yes. They're home in this matchup, and the NFL's been crazy this year. That's why you never know, but I'll take the Dirty Birds here getting 2.5 on the road.
I took Atlanta last night. They did me good. I'm going with San Francisco.
There it is.
I'm going to go. Shanahan, man, he's done a great job. You got to say, too, what Mac Jones has done at quarterback.
Right.
Man, for three quarters, he went toe-to-toe with the Bucs, and they were coming after him, too. They don't have a lot of weapons, and he's making it work. You know what? Atlanta, the one consistent thing about them is they're inconsistent. I'm going to go with San Francisco here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they had the game where they lose 30-0 to the Panthers, and then they beat the Bills last night. This is a team that's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I'm just hoping that we get, you know, Dr. Jekyll in this upcoming weekend's matchup against the 49ers, because, as you mentioned, if you're talking about Coach of the Year candidates, Kyle Shanahan is right up there with what he's been able to do.
He's done one hell of a job.
With all of the injuries and to key top players on this roster, too, with Bosa and Kittle and Purdy, and now Fred Warner's out for the year.
Yes, indeed.
All of their highest paid, best players, all pro-level talent, has been injured, and they're still finding ways to win. But give me the Falcons here. I think they might be building something towards the middle part of the season. And that's it.
That's why I'm going with San Francisco.
Yeah. That's it, guys.
Because, okay, the last thing you remember is what they did against Buffalo.
Right.
Okay? That's why that line is the way it is. But you know what? There's something to the 49ers. I got to give them a lot of credit. And I think Mac Jones, he has really done a fantastic job filling in for Brock Purdy. And defensively, they play the run pretty well. They really do. Man, they stout against the run. So, yeah, that's why I'm going with San Francisco.
And we'll see how it goes, guys. We only have two clean sweeps this weekend with LSU and Alabama. So sorry to Tiger fans and Tide fans because their clean sweeps haven't been very good.
We'll be back to finish it off here on, I was almost saying second guess. Show. So many things roll through the head on Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870 WWL. Mike Dottiglio along with Steve Geller, also Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at a little after 6:10, Jake Madison locked on Pelicans. We'll be talking Pelicans. And at 7 o'clock, Mike Hoss, Saints Hour. He'll have on with him the money man himself, Kai Harley, right here on the Big 870 WWL.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.